AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Welcome, everyone. This is Amy and TJ, and this is actually a very special anniversary. I know that. How many years have you been in the business covering events and such?
25.
25 years. 27 plus for me. Can you recall, TJ, ever covering a plane crash where anyone survived?
That is... I can only remember one, but I'm trying to think of another. And that's tough right now. I can't come up with it.
Right. You're looking for a survivor, if anyone survived. But I think we all can remember 15 years ago, that's the crazy part, where there was a plane crash. And you didn't just have some survivors or a survivor, but you had 155 survivors. Everyone on board, passengers and crew, survived. Of course, we are talking about The Miracle on the Hudson. And I covered it. I was with another network just from the desk as an anchor. You were actually on the ground. You were at CNN when this all went down.
I was. Yeah. But see, so I was in Atlanta with CNN, which was where most of the shows were coming out of at that time. And it was an easy flight over to Charlotte because Charlotte is where that plane was headed. And so many folks on that plane were trying to get home. So they did make it on that flight, at least. A lot of them caught the next one, and I was there to receive them at the airport in Charlotte. But those survivors. It's crazy to think you were just in a plane crash, and then you ran and got on another plane.
Some of them did. Not everyone did. I don't know that I would. Would you have done that? Would you have jumped on a plane right after?
You know what? I think so. Because what are the chances?
Right?
There's no way I'm going to be involved in 2 plane crashes.
Lightning doesn't strike twice.
Back-to-back day. There's no way. And plus, I know how you are. I am sure you would have gotten on a plane. I am sure because I got to get home. The schedule, you got to plan it. I am sure you would have gotten on a plane.
Well, it is, and it continues to be, an unthinkable miracle, actually. Of course, Captain Sully Sullenberg safely landing U.S. Airways 1549 in the icy Hudson River. I think it was like 20-something degrees outside that day. A flock of geese, in case you don't remember, took out his engines and forced a crash landing. And incredibly, Sully, as he is affectionately referred, landed that plane on the Hudson, and everyone made it out okay. And it is a story that we don't want to forget because there aren't many stories like this that have this kind of ending. And it's not even just about the miracle of the landing. But I think what's really remarkable about this story is that 15 years later, it's not the crash, it's what happened after the crash to so many of these survivors. When you go through something that is truly a near-death experience, you don't live the same way that you did before. And I spoke to one of the survivors way back, and I'll never forget this woman. She said to me, everyone at some point in their life has their plane crash. It's what you do with your life afterwards that counts. And so we have two of the survivors from that incredible miracle, Flight 1549, with us today on this podcast, 15 years later to the date, to not only talk about what they went through, but how this impacted and changed their lives forever, how they live differently. So we want to welcome Jim Whitaker and Valley Collins to the podcast to honor what they went through and to talk about where they are now, because it is such an incredible journey to get to this day. So welcome. Thank you for being here, Jim and Valley.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hey, folks, thanks for the invitation.
Well, Jim, I'll ask you, we were just kind of joking here about whether or not we would have gotten on a plane right after that. Is this right? I think you've told this story over the years. Not only did you get on a plane pretty soon, you were literally on the phone trying to book another flight very, very soon, maybe even while the plane was still sitting there on the Hudson and you hadn't even gotten to dry land yet.
I have flown a few flights and I mistakenly thought U.S. Airways would be ready for a crash and to rebook survivors, but I was wrong. Every single day. So yeah, when I first called U.S. Airways, at the time U.S. Airways, it was very funny because I did call and say, hey, I'm a crash survivor. I'd like to get on another airplane. And they like didn't get it. They thought it was a sicker joke than normal because it literally, by the time I called, had not even made it to the wire yet inside of the carrier, which was beyond bizarre. And then by the time we even got to the airport later that night, those folks at the counter still didn't know there had been an airplane crash. And all I had for an ID was a library card. And we wanted to get on an airplane and go home.
But Jim, I'm still struggling of your mindset. You just went through something that traumatic and you don't even have time to process it before you are literally trying to get back on another plane.
Well, I was defective before. So I was only a little bit more defective after this.
That's incredible. So. And, you know, Jim, I don't know that you know this, but I believe you and TJ might have met 15 years ago.
Yeah, that was, and I might have interviewed you because I was there at the Charlotte airport waiting on that plane to land. And it was, we were all waiting. So many reporters and photographers were there. Like, we don't know which ones are going to be the survivors. Like, what does a plane crash survivor look like? We're like, oh, okay, which ones are going to be? It was not easy to identify, hard to identify you guys, because you were wearing Red Cross blankets as like a badge of honor when you got out. And also, most of y'all were half drunk. They were giving y'all free drinks on the flight, on the way, which they should have. But you all got off. You're the happiest plane crash survivors I'd ever seen.
Well, I think it was the Red Cross blanket that did it, TJ. That may be a matter of opinion. But it was the free swag from having been a crash survivor. Getting a Red Cross blanket is some kind of a gold star for surviving.
And Jim, you said your clothing was still wet when you got off that plane.
Yeah, I was being silly, but it's true. And Valley would know the same story. But by the time the plane stopped moving in the river, the inside was taking on water very quickly. So having survived an airplane crash, the next scare was I really don't want to drown floating down the river in the middle of the winter. So, yeah, we were all plenty wet on the inside before we got off of the airplane and were rescued to the shoreline. But then something about walking around the rest of the day in wet clothes is just really not a cool feeling. So I was ready to go home.
I can only imagine. And Valley, I was actually able to speak to both of you a couple years ago, which was, it's pretty awesome to be able to come back 5 years later and see how you're doing. But I remember I asked you what your seat number was.
26D.
You'll never forget that.
Never, as long as I live. No. Actually, my seat was 26D was my assigned seat, but after the birds hit, I got up in the aisle because the flight attendant was trying to get something behind my seat, and the empty seat next to me was 26E because we had one baby on board. So we had an empty seat, so the flight attendant told me to sit in that middle seat. So I started in 26D, but I landed in 26E.
Oh, wow.
But I still claim 26D.
Landed.
Landed.
How confusing is that?
Landing on the Hudson, not just your regular runway. I want to ask you both, and Valley, I'll start with you. What is it like to hear the phrase coming from the captain of the plane, brace for impact? What's the first thing you think? What's the first thing you do?
Well, the first thing I thought, the gentleman at the window, he had been looking out and he told me we were going into the river. So I, you know, he said, be ready. We're going in the water. So like right about the time that Sullenberger said brace for impact. So I'm just thinking airplane water landing. This plane's going to cartwheel, going to bust into a lot of pieces. So Valley, if you're conscious, just swim to the light. That's just what I told myself. I'm a person that always wants to have a plan. And that was my plan, that if I was awake and conscious, just pull the seat, you know, unbuckle the seatbelt and start swimming towards the light. Now, before the brace for impact comment or, you know, PA announcement from Sullenberger, I was pretty aware we were in a dire situation. My seatmate had told me there was birds. I could smell the smoke. We didn't have any other thrust. So, you know, in those moments, my thoughts were more just about raising my children, not getting to see them hit all those milestones. I sent my husband a text message that said my flight is crashing, because I didn't want him to wonder for an hour or a day or a week, you know, to get confirmation. Because this is 15 years ago. We didn't have Google calendars. We didn't keep up with what airline, what flight number, you know, we traveled all the time. So I thought, he doesn't even know I'm on board the plane. So that's kind of what I got done in the 3.5 minutes from when the birds hit to when they did.
3.5 minutes. Jim, what did you do?
Well, Valley's description was a good one. There was already plenty of pandemonium going on, because remember, from wheels up to impact with the birds was only 90 seconds. But everything was at full thrust, typical day in the aviation business, right? So from the moment of the bird impact, pandemonium was quick to start, of course. And then the command to brace for impact only made everything exponentially worse on the inside of the airplane. And, you know, there's probably not a set of words that does justice to the things that Valley was talking about and what we both experienced, because that's just one of those worst moments where you just wouldn't be able to describe another human, where people are so between total silence to praying out loud, to screaming and crying, to cursing in anger. It was the fullest, broadest range of emotions you could possibly imagine ever hearing at one time. So it was as raw a moment as I've, of course, ever experienced in life.
But you talk about the range of emotion and a range of thoughts. Valley was just mentioning, she talked about her kids, wanting to be there for her kids and raise her kids. But Jim, in 90 seconds, the impact happens with the birds, and then another essentially 90 seconds and you're in the river. What though, at what point in those 3 minutes did it switch from, oh my God, I'm going to die, to, oh wow, I'm going to survive this thing?
Well, everyone has their own experience and everyone has their own faith tradition. So the thought of dying wasn't really that so-called scary to me, but I was way preoccupied because I was the dummy that got a standby seat. So I was sitting next to the woman with the baby. So I was really, really preoccupied by a 9-month-old that was practically as big as his mother, crawling everywhere. So the for me, that whole experience was really, really small in the fact that it was between two humans that had never met one another before, and a mother that was separated from her husband and another child on board and clearly terrified and not knowing what to do with this rambunctious baby. So me, like a fool, being a father of five, said, hey, let me hold your baby. And she was incredibly, incredibly courageous, as I'm sure you all have heard the story before, as she actually surrendered and gave up her child to someone else that she thought maybe, because he was a nut, was going to somehow be able to protect this child as we were going in the river.
Wow, that is incredible. I'm curious, Valley, what actually goes through your mind? Did you believe you were going to die? And do you see your life flash before you? Do things seem like they happened in slow motion? What were those 3.5 minutes like?
Well, to echo what Jim said, I don't think I was so scared of dying. I've always been a person of faith. So I remember thinking, well, God, this is your will. I accept it. I'm not crazy about it, but I accept it. And I do. At that point, I was 37 years old that day, and 3 of my 4 grandparents were still alive. So the one grandparent that had passed, I just thought, well, he's going to be there waiting on me. So I wasn't so scared of dying. I was just more selfishly. I mean, it's FOMO at the max. Okay. I was so sad about all the things I was going to miss out on in my family's life. That's what really made me so sad. You know, I'm not a perfect mother, but I am their mother. And my children were 4, 6, and 9 on that day. So I knew it's going to totally impact their life significantly for the rest of their lives. Not that I didn't think Steve would do a great job finishing raising them, but I was just wrecked about all those big moments, all those big milestone moments I was going to miss.
No, Valley, tell me, past 15 years, what have been the milestone moments? What have been the moments that, oh my God, I cannot imagine I would have missed this?
Oh gosh, I'm going to get teaching them all 3 to drive a car, drive a stick shift. In our house, your first car is a stick shift because you can't text and drive a stick shift. You know, none of your friends can drive your car. Insurance is cheaper. So, I mean, you know, those were moments of laughter and tears. So, you know, teaching them to use a little grip to drive a stick shift. Going to kindergarten, my youngest. I mean, his first day of school, the first day of high school, the proms, the graduations. I mean, one's out of college, one's going to graduate from college this May, and my baby just went to college. You know, being able to take them to, I mean, you name it, dance recitals, baseball games, the list is long. And I think because of being a part of this experience, I have all those milestones are all more sweet to know that I am here to see them.
Where are they in college? Are they Tennessee Volunteers too?
Well, one is a Tennessee Volunteer. Okay. One is a graduate of Wake Forest in North Carolina. The senior this year, he's all Vol, and my baby is a Baylor Bear. He goes to school in Waco, Texas. He's a Sikkim Bear. So they've got three different paths, and I wouldn't want it any other way.
I wish you could have seen Jim while you were talking. He was clapping. He was cheering. He even had fireworks behind him at one point. He was echoing everything you were saying. We're going to hear more about what this experience has done to change your life, how you've lived differently. We're going to hear all about that when we come back.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
All right, back here now, Jim Whitaker, Valley Collins, two of the survivors of Flight 1549 that crashed in the Hudson, the Miracle on the Hudson, I guess is what we should all be referring to it as these days. That's how we know it. But all 155 people on board that flight, of course, survived. Captain Sully, it's been cool to hear Valley here. She keeps referring to him by his full name,
yeah.
Sullenberger. You have a different relationship than the rest of us do. We call him Sully. But that's cool to hear, Jim. Let me ask you, what was the pre-Miracle on the Hudson Jim Whitaker like as opposed to the guy we are sitting here talking to now?
Well, again, both versions are defective. However, the one before, and there's still now today, long-time, lifelong road warrior, thousands of flights, thousands of nights in hotels, traveled all over the country, all over the world. And so the whole experience of traveling, that is, and takeoff and so forth and so on, that was as commonplace as driving to work. But the distinguishing characteristic that made this different, and I'd been on planes before where an engine had gone out or something had occurred, but never had I been on an airplane at takeoff that had gone from full thrust to being a glider. No noise, no engine, no nothing. And I just described that to say that of course, for someone that had been on thousands and thousands of flights, that was an immediate clicks in the back of your brain like something's wrong. This is a big problem, obviously. So flash forward to now, since then, 15 years, scary to say, but not only hundreds, but thousands more flights. I've continued doing the same thing, but to the points that Valley made earlier, that of all those life experiences that came thereafter, the graduations and the grandchildren and the events that were special, there is an awareness to realize that I would not be having this experience but for the hands of others and the grace of God. And that is as we race through all of our lives, that's probably something I know I'm often easy to forget about. Hey, I should pay attention and be present in this moment because it's a gift that I'm here right now. If I had thought that 20 years ago, of course not.
But we need to remind folks, you weren't supposed to be on this plane. You were a standby passenger, is that right?
Well, again, back to the defectiveness. I've made a lot of foolish choices in life, but one of them was getting done early in Manhattan, running to the airport. Again, being the road warrior, trying to get home early. Life's going to be great. Maybe I'll even catch dinner. And that was a very interesting choice to get on the standby list and get the window seat next to the baby in the back.
Jim and I have some similarities in that. It's interesting that you put us on here together because I flew maybe not quite as much as Jim, but I flew a lot with my job as well. But I always flew Delta. So that's where I had all my, you know, platinum, first class, bump up, all my perks. But this trip was like a last minute trip. So the U.S. Airways trip ticket was like $800 less. So I remember thinking, well, I'll save my company that money, forego my little frequent flyer perks, and I'll go U.S. Airways today. So that's why I ended. So I wasn't supposed to be on that flight either. Mm. Technically, wow. That's not normally. And that's how I ended up on the last row with the empty seat that was there because Jim had the baby in his row. So it's kind of, we, and I think both of us kind of have a faith base, and you're like, well, why was I there? What am I supposed to learn from that? What am I supposed to take away from that? Because there were passengers on our flight that took that flight every week. You know, that was just their way home to Charlotte every week. But not the case for me.
Do you think you were supposed to be on that flight now, Valley? I know you said you're a woman of faith. And do you think that it was something that was fated to be? And you said you learned a lot. What was the biggest thing you learned?
Well, first of all, I'm not smart enough to answer the question of, is it fate? Is I supposed to be there or not supposed to be there? I have zero idea. I have a lot of learnings I took away. Probably the very, well, two things I'll say. After you sit in a moment where you really think you're going to die and then all of a sudden you don't, there's a sense of life purpose and life responsibility. You just feel that onus even greater. Okay, I'm kind of in the bonus round of Jeopardy. You know, how do I get this right and make the most of it? So that's one of the things. Probably the biggest learning I took away was just the power of perspective. That, you know, no matter, just not to sweat the small stuff, as cliche as it sounds. You know, it's interesting. When I was, before takeoff, I was talking to the gentleman at the window, and we had this empty seat in between us, and they kept telling us it's this full flight. Well, you keep waiting for who's the person that's going to plop down in the empty seat.
Oh, yeah.
And we backed away from the gate, and there was still this empty seat, and I looked at him. I'm like, well, this must be our lucky day, because here we've got all this elbow room to Charlotte. Well, you know, little did I know how lucky it was going to be in the next 7-8 minutes. So I think I just try to, you know, every day's a lucky day. Even if it's not a great day, I'm still just lucky. We're all lucky to be here.
Well, you say clearly you're smart enough to answer the question she just asked, which you were trying to say. But you all helped me. Everybody I'm sitting here with, Robes with a breast cancer scare in her life to where she thought she was going to die. And still, quite frankly, every 6 months, she's waiting on a report or going, and you're still wondering about how much time you have left. Valley, Jim, both of you all, you all weren't supposed to be on the flight. You got standby passenger here. You ended up flying. You're trying to save some money for your company, which I'd never recommend that. But still, but for both of you all, maybe all three of you, got to help me understand here. That's not just, who chalks that up to just coincidence? We've always, and I've gotten more into it later in my life, about like the universe giving you signs or follow. There are signs out there. What do you make? Let me start with you, Jim, since clearly you're going to be smart enough to answer that. But but how do you make sense of, I'm not supposed to be here? She's not supposed to be here. Robach, even a lot of people would argue, maybe not supposed to be here. Her cancer was caught early. But we all are sitting here now on this call, on this podcast together. Jim, how do you, or do you even try to make sense of something like that?
I'm going to help you, TJ. I'm not going to leave you hanging. I'm going to help you. I would say to that, and trying to be serious, is my perspective has changed in that I can't explain it either, and probably nor can any of us, about why did this happen or what if. That kind of is a lost cause. But what we can say is, well, I am still here. And what more purposeful, meaningful impact can I have on the lives of those that are most close to me and depend upon me? And then the next concentric ring out from that, and the next concentric ring out from that. So for me, at least, what I've tried to be a better, I fail a lot, however, but I've tried to be a better parent and spouse and brother and son to my parents. So that, trying to be that better individual. But more importantly, I've also learned, to Valley's good point, is I've become much more, maybe with age too, more influential as a mentor in other folks' lives that are going through challenging circumstances in their personal lives. I found a lot of reward and satisfaction in that, and trying to help others navigate their circumstances, which seems maybe traumatic at the time. And I can always say, yeah, but you weren't on a plane crash. So that's the perspective.
Correct.
Just get a grip.
Yeah. And I'm sure his family and friends, like my family and friends, kind of get tired of me always putting a perspective on it. One of my dearest friends, when she'll call and she'll go, I said, okay, do you want my real opinion? Do you want real, or you just want me to, you just want me to side with you right now? Or do you want me to give you the perspective of, and she's like, no, I just want you to side with me right now. Just like, wow.
What's the biggest change that both of you made in your life once you survived and got back home? I'll start with you, Jim.
Well, that's a bad start because I don't have a great story to tell you. I couldn't say to you, I wouldn't tell you some fabulous lie that says I was a new person the next day when I woke up. I wasn't. I was still the same defective me, sure, as I've already tried to describe, but it wasn't a road to Damascus moment, and I somehow woke up and I was some new human and had this different perspective on life. I didn't. I was certainly more thankful and grateful, and I am today, but I'm not some different human because I wasn't an inauthentic person before. I'm just more appreciative for the gifts that I've been given now that I'm still here. We're obviously spending the time we are right now talking about something that happened back then, but I'm more grateful for the gifts that I've been given in my life and have been since then.
Valley?
Like Jim, I wasn't all of a sudden a different person. I was a pretty positive, friendly, tried to be kind person before this. In some ways, I was not as, I've always been very strong, very confident, kind of a type A leader type person. Not very fearful. I would say I became a little more fearful and, you know, I'm much more like myself now, 15 years later than I was, let's say a month later or 6 months later or a year later. You know, when I first got home, I thought, okay, you know, I'm good. Let's go right back to life. Let's, you know, have these two busy careers with traveling and three small children. And then about a month in, I couldn't do it. I could not keep all the balls in the air. I'd be on a conference call. I couldn't remember what people said. I'd start typing an email and I'd forget my train of thought. Should be so happy to be alive, but I just felt so sad. And you know, one of the challenges I'll say for me, I can't speak for all the passengers, but you know, it was the good news story of the year. People, it was so cool. It was so exciting. It was so miraculous. People were like, wow, wasn't that amazing? And you're like, yeah, but it was also really scary. And it was traumatic. I know that word gets used a lot, but it was traumatic and it was scary. So all of a sudden I became this person that was driving down the interstate like, oh no, that semi's going to come over and they're going to crash into my car and we're all going to die. Or I wouldn't put something on my calendar for 2 weeks later because I'm probably not going to live two more weeks. You know, so the fragileness of life became hyper focused. Or we have a boat, our kids water ski behind the boat. They'd fall. I'm like, get back, get them, because there's going to boat come, it's going to knock, you know, it's going to kill them. You know, I mean, I just became very, very aware of how fragile life is and how quickly it can change. Now, time has helped that neurosis, if you want to call it, but I still lack a little bit of the moxie confidence that I had. And that's okay, because I think it makes me appreciate and be a little, you know, just being more appreciative for the time that I have had.
Val, you use the word traumatic. Obviously, that's what I guess everybody on that plane would say. They experienced a traumatic experience. But you also said, like over time or immediately after, you had times where you felt so sad. What was that about?
I think that's just one of the symptoms of PTSD. You know, as I went through my therapy, I learned that a lot of times it doesn't present immediately. It's, you know, a month, 6 weeks, 2 months after, just when kind of the shock wears off. I don't want to speak for Jim. Probably it was real easy for him to get on that plane that night because he was just still in shock. We were all still in shock. My first flight was 5 days later. That wasn't as hard as the flights 3 months later, 6 months later. So I don't know. I was just in shock. I mean, it just takes time. I've spoken to audiences over the years about this experience, and you going back to like, why was I there? Why were we there? When I've had like a 6'3" Marine veteran come up to me with tears in his eyes and say, thank you for talking about PTSD. Thank you for putting it out front. That's probably one of my moments that I was like, maybe that's why I was there. Yeah. Because I think better now, I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but, or get on a soapbox. But I think even now, more than 15 years ago, we talk more about mental health than we did. And just, I tell people, you know, I looked just fine on the outside when I walked off that plane, aside from being in soaking wet clothes. You know, nothing was broken. I wasn't bruised. I didn't walk with a limp. I mean, when my husband looked at me, I looked like the same old Valley, but I was not the same old Valley. And honestly, it took a little while for us, even as a couple, to you know, figure out the new me, if you will. And I hope in some ways I'm a better version of myself. In some ways, I'm not as good a version of myself as before I boarded that flight.
I really appreciate your honesty and your transparency, because when the unthinkable happens, when the thing that is almost impossible actually happens to you, that fear is real. And fear is a powerful thing. And I can't imagine not being afraid after going through something like that. When people say, oh, what are the chances? You can say, actually, if it's less than 1%, if it happens to you, it's everything. It's 100%, right? And living then your life knowing that your greatest fear could actually happen is crippling in moments. How do you get past that? Jim, did you feel the same way at all?
Well, this is a maybe a different tangent or not for where you all thought the conversation would go, but I have found this fascinating, yes, because of this. Afterward, after the crash, like Valley, I went to a number of groups that wanted to hear this story, and they wanted to hear someone talk about it. So I had done a fair amount of public speaking at work. So I went on the rubber chicken circuit of Civitans and Qantas's and professional groups and all that stuff. And I talked to a number of groups. And every time, somewhere in this talk, which was just conversational like we're doing now, but I had a few props, right? People would start crying. And I thought, man, I mean, I know I'm a bad presenter, but this is painful. And there would just be these people sitting there in these very small, intimate groups, you know, and they would just be crying. And then afterward, they would come up and they, similar to what Valley described, and say things like, thank you. And I've always been so fearful this was going to happen to me, this total consuming fear of flying. So what you talked about earlier, Amy, about fear is this incredibly powerful ruling emotion in our lives about, I fear these things and I've had these things happen to me. And this is it. The whole experience of just retelling that story to people seems to have unlocked their own feelings of the things that they fear and been able to give them a little bit of maybe not comfort, but courage that they can survive whatever moment they are in now. It's just been a fascinating, that period of time was fascinating to me. And to Valley's point, it probably helped me too, unknowingly so, kind of process those emotions in my subconscious mind, you know, just work through all that by contributing and being with other people and talking about the topic.
Well, making people feel not alone, knowing that other people also can talk about their fears and face them and acknowledge them is a huge gift that you've given so many people. We're going to talk more with Valley and Jim when we come back.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. Check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And I'm Oliver Hudson. And at last I checked, we're siblings.
And this is Sibling Revelry.
We're full blood siblings, the only full blood sibling
in our family. Well, not in the world. I mean,
no, in the whole world. This is it. Like, no one. Anyway, we're back with season four. I can't believe it's been four seasons.
Yes, I'm so excited. Yeah. Bigger and better than ever. You might be asking yourself, what is sibling revelry?
Yeah, well, we just made it up. There is no sibling revelry. It's reveling in your sibling.
And it's fun because we've decided to open it up, you know, to really like all kinds of different siblings. And it's going to be an awesome season.
So listen to Sibling Revelry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Jim Whitaker and Valley Collins, two of the survivors of the miracle on the Hudson. And we are looking back, not only what happened 15 years ago, but what that has led them to today and who they are today, because a near-death experience, I mean, it affects people differently. I want to ask you, Valley, would you give the experience back if you could?
I would. If I had my choice, I would not board that plane again. I'm so thankful for what I've learned, what I've taken from it, the gift of perspective and gratitude. But I guess maybe giving me that sense of fear that I'd never had before, I kind of enjoyed the 37 years before just not really being scared of many things other than snakes.
I love it. You'd give it back. How about you, Jim?
No, I would relive it again. I had the benefit of, which is even weirder and not today's talk, but I was on another aircraft that happened to catch on fire. So I was a pro by the time this rolled around, in the fact that it is scary to go in the river, but if you're in a small aircraft and there are only two of you on it and it catches on fire, now that is a sense of emergency.
Jim, you need to take some road trips, brother. You gotta stop flying, man.
Or if I'm on a plane that you're on, I'm getting off.
Oh, my God,
Jim. Well, this is so funny because I was on one struck by lightning with an emergency landing before the Hudson. And then the December of 2009, the same year, I was on one that lost nose steering. So we had to have the full emergency cabin preparedness, emergency vehicles line in the runway. I mean, some people are like, well, what are the chances? I'm kind of like, well, I've kind of been in three incidences. You know what I mean? It's just so funny that we're both on here at the same time. You know, my mom's like, well,
isn't
you're
that something?
Yeah.
And for the record, just to make it clear, you all still happily and willingly board planes. Yes. In fact, you just got off one recently.
I don't know about happily. I do it because I want to go where I want to go. I don't love it. I'm never going to love it like I did before when I was just, you know, naive. But it is the safest way to travel. I do tell people the most dangerous part of an airplane trip is the drive in your car to the airport. You know, if we all heard about every fatal car wreck in our country every day, none of us would get in our car. It's just with plane crashes, when something happens, it's a lot of people at once and everybody hears about every one of them. Yeah, so.
Apparently, it's the safest way to travel unless your name is Jim Whitaker or Valley Collins.
I want to ask y'all, did the Tom Hanks movie get it right?
You know, the Tom Hanks movie, which I loved the movie Sully, Tom Hanks could read the phone book and I would be entertained. Yep. So I thought the movie was great. It's definitely from Sullenberger's perspective. I don't think they got the evacuation scene in the movie right, personally. I mean, in the movie, and I haven't seen the movie in a lot of years, but I remember that they're like, here, have a blanket. It's cold out there, like the flight attendant said. And it just wasn't that way. It was chaotic. It was a lot of water. It was a lot of, I mean, you know how chaotic it is trying to get off the plane when you're parked at the gate. So, you know, you can imagine. So that's the only part of the movie if I was going to take issue with. But it doesn't upset me. I thought it was a great film.
What about you, Jim?
Right. It was definitely a Hollywood version of a feel-good moment, for sure. And one takes liberties when you're making a Hollywood movie. There were other movies, as you all may remember, the docudrama and the documentary class. There have been several other ones made. But the Hollywood version, I think, was more centered on entertainment, because Valley's exactly right. As we were talking about earlier, there's just no way to one, it wouldn't be entertainment. It'd be a horror show. And then two, there's just no way to capture how raw and nasty all of that was at the time that it was occurring, before everyone was off the airplane and on water taxis and the event was kind of past, right? That period of time in there in the crash sequence and the rescue. That was pretty ugly, right?
I cannot even imagine.
My scariest moment in the whole event was after we landed and I went to the galley and there was a hole in the APU fell off the tail of the plane and you know we couldn't get out the back exits and the water was rushing in to about my shoulder level and thinking I was going to drown. That was really my scariest moment, was just being in that galley with that cold water and realizing we're not getting out the back and people are in front of me still trying to come to the back, you know, and I'm thinking this gentleman's going to mow me over, you know, trying to get people turned around and move towards the wings. So that was really, for me, my scariest moment.
Yeah. Just hearing you describe that, you just get chills from head to toe. That is just worst case scenario, thinking you're trapped in this plane and the water's rushing in. I'm curious, 15 years has passed. Has there been a day where you haven't thought about it, Valley?
Oh, sure. Yeah. There have been plenty of days where I have not thought about it, especially, like I said, time helps. You know, in the first year or 2 years, no, there probably wasn't a day I didn't think about it. But as time has gone on, but if I do catch myself in a moment of, you know, kind of sweating the small stuff or getting annoyed because, you know, my boys left all their underwear all over the floor or something, you know, we'll be like, all right, I'm still the mom that's here that gets to pick up the dirty underwear. And that's what life's about, is the real stuff. And I'm just happy I've been here to enjoy the real stuff. But I don't think about it every day.
You know, Jim, speaking on the real stuff, why does it take, you know, speak to people out there. We've all known people in our lives, and you all are two examples as well. They go through something traumatic, and then they make a change in their life. People have something, they hit rock bottom, and they make a change in their life. Something has to happen. Can you speak to, Jim, to people? And they all have their own experiences, of course. But how would you encourage people to not wait for that moment? Don't wait until you have a near-death experience. Don't wait until you hit rock bottom. Today is a day you can start to appreciate more and love more and be kinder and do what Valley says, you know, don't sweat the small stuff. What would be your words of encouragement for folks to not have to have a plane crash, a literal plane crash, before they make changes?
Man, I'll take an easier question for 100.
Glad you gave that's it to the smart guy.
That is a heavy one. I don't know that I know the right answer, but what you just described resonates with me too at a personal level, because that bouncing on the bottom happens for a lot of us, whether you have problems with substance abuse or mental illness or whatever those things are. The bouncing on the bottom is often the path that many of us have to go through, because you don't know which way is up until you found the bottom. Mm-hmm. So to expect someone or to hope for someone or to desire for someone to be able to be self-aware enough to know that, hey, man, this is not working. This is not the best you. Perhaps that is such a giant decision that I find that most people don't make that decision because it requires so much courage and it's going to be painful, most likely. So the continuation of doing nothing is usually easier than doing something. And that's why that bouncing off the bottom seems to work for some folks, I have found in my life at least. So that is a really, really tough question. But back to being able to talk to folks is I have found it incredibly rewarding to be talking to others who have their own set of life problems, and they at least can get some type of positive reflection from the fact that, oh, well, wow, that happened to you, and here you still are, and you seem to be marginally okay. Maybe my circumstance isn't so bad. Maybe I could make better choices. Maybe I will choose to do. That's been an incredibly powerful experience for me.
I love that. Do you all do anything special to honor this day, Valley?
Not really. I mean, on the 1 year anniversary, the 5 year anniversary, the 10 year anniversary, I went to those events. It's amazing to me how many of my friends and family, I'll get more texts, messages, emails on this day than I will on my birthday. It's kind of crazy. So I always acknowledge it. Do I have a specific tradition? No, I just keep living that day, whatever it brings. I mean, in fact, this year on the 15th anniversary, one of the changes I made in, not really a change I made in my life, but I did quit working full time a few months after the experience, went part time and then quit working altogether just to raise my family. But I started to participate more in nonprofits and trying to help other people, because I do think when you're struggling yourself, what makes you feel better than to try to help somebody else who's less fortunate than you are? And so I am the chair of a nonprofit that works with malnourished babies in Uganda. And our today is our board strategic planning retreat. So I'm with some people that are very like-minded with me with helping those that are less fortunate. So I'm going to market today trying to, in some small way, help someone that is a whole lot worse off than I am.
Jim, you mark the day as well?
My answer is much more practical than Valley's, which is one of the many reasons why I'm so fond of her. But I'm going to the airport on Monday because that's where I belong.
You're flying on the anniversary day.
Yeah.
Valley, have you done that at all? Flown on the anniversary day in any of the past 15 years?
Yes, I have flown on the anniversary date. I did after one of our, I have flown on the anniversary date. Yes, okay. I have.
I expected from defective Jim, but I wasn't expecting you, Valley.
I think I've only done it one time. We're taking a bus to the retreat.
Well, Jim, Valley, thank you so much for joining us. It has been incredible to be able to talk to y'all about what you went through, how far you've come, and you have a long, beautiful life to look forward to. And thanks for inspiring us along the way. I appreciate how real you kept it, how down to earth you are. You're not trying to make it be anything more than what it is, and the lessons you learned along the way. We appreciate it, and we took notes. And thank you all. And I don't know, do you say happy anniversary on an anniversary like this? I don't know.
Why not?
Yeah. So happy anniversary.
It's our golden anniversary, 15 years on the 15th. So
there you go. Well, happy anniversary, y'all. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Bye. Yeah. All the best.
Thank you so much.
Jim.
Everybody, they're saying bye to each other there. Hey, folks, you can, of course, continue to follow the show here on Instagram at Amy and TJ Podcast. That was a great one. It's great to talk to folks like that who have that type of perspective and can give us all a little bit. I'm still fascinated. I can imagine her husband, the text, "My plane is crashing." She says she sent him that message as they were going out. She had 3 minutes to do it, I guess. I can imagine getting that type of message from you.
I hope to never send one like that, TJ.
Yeah.
That'll be on my list of goals, things not to do.
Put a sweet emoji next to it, maybe. It'll lighten it.
Tired of restless nights? At Lisa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health.
from memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long. Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Are you spending more time in your basement now that it's your rec room, office, kids' playroom, or home gym? Well, you need to ventilate those spaces to remove stagnant, musty air. For over 20 years, the Easy Breathe ventilation system exchanges dirty, damp air for cleaner, drier, healthier air. Take charge of your indoor air with your own Easy Breathe ventilation system. You can get it installed, or DIY kits are available. Just call 866-822-7328 or visit takechargeofyourair.com and receive 20% off today.